Hello, everyone, and welcome to Toonami Therapy on September 3rd, 2020. I'm Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And we're here to talk about the anime we've been watching, some of which aired on Toonami. Because Toonami's actually back, and it looks like those claims of things not being on next week were false, because yes, we are getting our shows next week, which is good. Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess we can just jump right into it. Then we have a new show, and so we've got So we're starting with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure: Golden Wind, episode 31. So they continue to their battle, and basically, we find out that the villain also, in addition to all that other stuff he abilities he had, is able to actually surgically separate his body into pieces with the mole, with like the green days or green tea's mold. You know, some people just like get like astoundingly lucky with their stand abilities, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, you have the guy who has the ability to make himself invisible and control oxygen levels and make weapons appear within his opponent's bodies. And then you have the guy who got the stand that kills him if anyone looks at his back. Okay. Anyway, so they're doing that, and they managed to actually beat him and in actually a really big pummeling, like that apparently lasted something. I think people said lasted 7 pages in the manga.
Wow.
Yeah, which is kind of a little weird because the bad guy was, like, definitely a major jerk, but he hadn't really been built up so much that I was thinking, wow, we really needed that much. But, this was the anime, so we didn't have to turn the page multiple times to see it. We just saw the guy, you know, pummeling him. Apparently the guy, the voice actor, did that whole sequence where he's, you know, just doing the shouting while, and stuff in one take. So they managed to, get that. However, then, that other villain guy, actually, I was a little confused on this, because he gets a call from, the villain that Giorno, apparently killed, and I was confused, and I was trying to figure out, was that a voice message that the actual villain sent him, or was it, or did Giorno somehow do something to like replicate his voice to say that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, anyway, villain number two is still around and fighting Bucciarati, and then we see some guy who's looking at them with binoculars.
Yeah, so green tea.
What?
Because there's a part three.
Oh, yeah. Well, technically, the part three is Green Day and Oasis, or, well, Green Tea and Sanctuary, if you go by the dubs, the licensed versions. So, you know, the Green Tea one, Green Day, I don't even know what I should be referring to them, might be over, but we're, you know, it's still the second thing listed that continues into the part three.
Yeah.
So, I remember enjoying this episode.
I was interested that Giorno like actually did something, which is like a real surprise, you know, because he hasn't really done much lately. So, yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah, the other The other thing that I wanted to mention, and I mentioned this to you when we were watching it, but I want to reiterate it for posterity. It's so funny because it looks like the villain is dead. And I just remarked, well, we know the villain isn't defeated. It hasn't played the victory music yet. There's that bit from the first theme song, or was it from the theme song, or was it just a theme of journalism? I can't remember. But there's this one bit of music that always plays when the heroes are about to land the final hit. And, of course, that played exactly when, later on, they gave the final hit.
So, that's actually a pattern you can follow.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It reminds me of, if you look... The earliest episodes of Shark Tank, I actually went back and watched the first few episodes. The music is super obvious in telling you what's going to happen. Like, this one bit of music starts playing, and you're like, oh, okay, the shark is about to go out. It's just so obvious in the earliest episodes. They get better with it as the show goes on. But if you watch those first few episodes, you can the music just telegraphs everything.
It does that in Survivor, too. But actually, in JoJo, I, rarely notice any music except for the opening and closing theme songs, which is surprising for a show that's all about music. Like, the music in the show, I really don't really notice, you know?
I don't usually really notice the music either, but I do like the sort of that one song that they play with that. I mean, I like it, so I started really noticing that's what it keeps playing at those times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, all right. So that's JoJo. It was enjoyable, and I liked it. I do remember you mentioned something about how you really liked the fact that Giorno's big speech was actually just stalling the villain.
Yeah, that was... Well, he actually admitted he even said it in the episode. He said, you know, I just said that just to stall a little bit. I can't believe they actually admitted that. That was... That was pretty funny.
Okay. After that, it's what was the order of the stuff they even aired on Toonami? Assassination Classroom was second, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've come to our new show, Assassination Classroom, Episode 1. So we're mostly introduced to the premise of the series, which is that a bunch of kids are being taught by a octopus monster thing who destroyed the moon and is announced. Actually, that was the best scene in it, where he's just talking to them and saying, hi, I'm the one who destroyed the moon, and later on this year I will destroy the earth, but never mind that, I'm going to be your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
They all just go, there is so much wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the premise is that he's going to be their teacher while they try to assassinate him to, you know, prevent him from destroying the earth. Except he's super insanely fast and powerful, so even though they've got these special weapons that are able to hurt him, it's going to be an uphill battle. And of course, when you describe the premise of the series, it kind of sounds dark, but really, this is a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
At least so far. So, I'm curious. What did you think of it?
I gotta be honest. I think it's a stupid premise for a show. I mean, it just makes no sense at all. And it's hard for me to... really get interested in it, given how just insane the idea is. Like, why in the world would he want to be a teacher of kids who are in a world that he's about to destroy anyway? It doesn't make any sense. So, I guess there's some funny things to it, But
I'll shut up and let you finish.
No, that's okay.
Okay. I should mention I did. Okay. So I, before this, long before this, I read through the manga. I didn't finish it because I reached a sort of part where the volumes weren't out yet. And then I didn't really get back to finishing it, but I read most of it. So I know most of the like plot twists. The things you're saying don't make sense. Those are explained later in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's just going to be tough to enjoy the early episodes if
did we have connection problem?
Oh, no.
Oh, I think we had a connection problem there again. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we got disconnected briefly there again.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry. If you wanted to try to restate what you were saying, or
no.
Okay, all right. But anyway, I enjoyed it. I thought there were some pretty funny jokes. I mean, you're correct that the premise is really silly. But I mean, it's supposed to be a silly premise. The series is mostly a comedy. There is some more dramatic stuff in it, especially later on, but it is for the most part comedic.
Well, that was my problem, was that they weren't taking this like a comedy. There was too much seriousness in the episode instead of you know, just saying we're making a silly show and we're just gonna, you know, play with that. But with the way the whole show was made out, you were made to think that this was some sort of like really super, you know, important mission that these kids are on, like, if it wants to be a comedy, then it should just be a comedy. It shouldn't have all this other stuff in it that's, you know, like, for example, Dragon Ball. What's his name?
Goku?
I can't remember his name. Goku? The purple guy.
Oh, purple guy. Purple. Oh, Beerus?
Yeah. Yeah, so whenever he's like, okay, I'm going to destroy the world now. Like, there was no, like, it wasn't played off like, oh, no, we've got to stop him. It was just kind of a silly thing. And this show is like, it's trying too hard to be serious whenever it should just say, you know what, this is just supposed to be, you know, nonsense.
Well, you know, when I say comedy, I mean, it's not like the series is a comedy, but there's a lot of comedy in it, is probably the better way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I enjoyed, and I'm excited to see some more of it. I'm glad I never finished the series now, so that there's some parts of it I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was Assassination Classroom. Then we're on to Black Clover episode 129. So basically, we find out there are bad guys that are like dangerous. And I mean, really what happens in this episode is they decide, we got to get stronger. Let's go training. Because it's just weird because we went through this stuff, it had all these super powerful enemies, and then it just like, well, even though our characters are super strong already and they beat all these crazy powerful stuff, we need more to the story, so they're gonna go up against stronger guys now, so they gotta get even stronger. It reminds me of what we kept having with Dragon Ball, where you keep having like Goku go to his absolute limit and achieve some new level of power that no one had ever done before. And then there's another arc, so you have to have him do it again. Like, I remember when Super Saiyan, when he went Super Saiyan, that was just like once in like a thousand years thing. And it was amazing that and other people hadn't done it. And, you know, then you look at, and then now there's all these multiple levels of Super Saiyan.
I thought some of that stuff with the ruler of the kingdom to be pretty funny.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was funny. It just that all that ultimately it is just a matter of having to you know, come up with new enemies and needing to do the training to get strong gur and such. It's just the that's like the that's kind of just the issue I've got with it. It's like, I mean, a lot of shonen does this. I remember Bleach, where they are, where like they're super strong. They're able to even take on the Espada and stuff and things. And then it's like, oh well, we need them to be in trouble again, so we've got even stronger enemies. I saw someone make a note about One Piece, and this is true, and I actually do kind of appreciate about it. The thing about, say, One Piece is they encounter stronger enemies, but it's always, it's just a matter of those enemies were always there. They just hadn't come across them yet. Whereas with, you know, Dragon Ball or Bleacher, for that matter, to a lesser extent, Black Clover, it feels like they just had to come up with new stuff in order to be able to, you know, like, continue to have challenges. I don't know. I'm going on a bit too much about that when we haven't even done the training stuff yet. So get ready for, yay, filler! Kind of. So in the manga, what happened is, they do this, and then it just cuts forward, I don't know, 6 months or something, and everyone's stronger. But the anime needed filler, so they apparently decided, we're going to show all that training. And apparently, you know, they talked with the author, and the author was like, okay, this is all the specifics of what happened, have at it. So, yeah, like that, like, remember how in Naruto, this is going way back, maybe you don't even remember. Remember that episode where Temaria goes up against Tenten and wins?
Yeah.
That in the manga, you didn't see that. It happened entirely off screen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, someone just like says, the most you see is someone say, wow, she shut down Tenten's attack like it was nothing. And then you just, and then it's most, and then like later on, and then a short time later, you see Tenten all defeated and stuff, which is honestly basically what she's always like. So, people make jokes about, you know, a bunch of characters, you know, like Rock Lee or Sakura, but they at least did some stuff. Sakura eventually got some important stuff. Tenten never contributes anything at all.
Yeah.
Remember when I made that remark, oh, you know, okay, this is how you know it's filler. Tenten is useful.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the epilogue just kind of says this because it, you know, when it shows everyone older and she's just kind of, and she like owns some like ninja weaponry shop and is annoyed that because there isn't a war going on, people aren't buying things from her. That's what you get for her. Okay. So we got that. Then we have Fire Force episode 16. Also known as the weirdest mood shifts I think I've seen in a single episode.
Uh-huh.
It starts out sort of serious and stuff. You know, they've got enemies and got to find it. Then it turns into a joke about where, what's the character's name? Arthur, yeah. Where he becomes, where after they put this, like, donkey head, fake donkey head, on his pants, he becomes convinced that he's a knight riding a horse and is able to beat a bunch of enemies. And it's all played very comedically. And then he realizes it's not an actual horse and is loses all his power and is defeated. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes straight back to being really serious, especially towards the end, where it's like just getting really dark and stuff.
Yeah, like they had like a whole torture scene in there. And I was like, I wonder when they're going to pull out the four lights and start asking him to see five lights.
I'm not sure I've ever seen like such a tonal shift in the same episode.
Yeah. I mean, that was a weird episode. I'm not sure it was weird in a good way either. It just was like sometimes whenever a show is like too weird, it ends up being a good thing, but not this time.
I mean, I don't have a problem with the show being comedic at points and being really dramatic at other points. My issue is when you have this complete, like, obviously farcical comedy, and then in the same episode go into being really dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of the stuff was kind of funny, but other than that, the tonal shift is just kind of hard to take seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So that's it for our Toonami stuff. All right, so then we've got Excel World episode 21 to 22. So they basically go... So first they contact that girl who's the Red King because they want to her to teach Taku about the incarnate system. And so they decide to go hyperbolic time chamber about it.
That's going to be our joke for now. Oh, wait a minute. I thought of something really funny. And what episode was it this week where there was a scene where, like, someone was a... Oh, Assassination Classroom. Yeah, I was going to make the joke that the teacher of Assassination Classroom is that guy from the movie Ocean's 12 who's able to just dance around and avoid all the laser beams. That's always my go-to joke about that scene. I'll never get over how stupid that scene was. And that's what Koro-san or whatever they're calling him
now. Koro-sensei.
Koro-sensei, yeah, him avoiding everything. That's what it reminded me of. I'm sorry, this came 20 minutes too late, but I remembered it.
Well, to be fair, Koro-sensei can move at Mach 20.
Yeah.
So, right. So we got that by Hyperbolic Time Chamber, of course, is just, we're going to spend several weeks in the accelerated world, which amounts to like half an hour in real life or whatever. So hyperbolic time chamber. Meanwhile, yeah. Haru and some other girl who works for the Red King end up going to try to investigate, because they're trying to figure out why Jerk Kid is not showing up on the player sensor thing or whatever. Anyway, so they do go through a bunch of stuff, and eventually they're able to figure out that he is using some kind of install chip thing that... Actually, I don't know about the specific... I'm a little confused by the specifics of it, but the important thing is that it's against the rules, and the school rules and stuff. So if it gets out, then he'd be expelled, thereby giving them blackmail material on him, so he can't blackmail them either, essentially. Also, I think this episode, is supposed to indicate that this takes place in the same continuity of as Sword Art Online, because they mention how people used to use nerve gear.
Oh, really? I missed that one.
Yeah, it was a part where they were, where he was, yeah, he mentioned that people used to use nerve gear, and you see that thing, and yeah, because that was from Sword Art Online. So this, so either that was, I don't know if they're supposed to be the same continuity, it might have just been a cute little reference, but if it is, then that means this is later on, some, that Sword Art Online took place in the past of this series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what, actually, I should have looked in, the timeline, because this takes place in 2046. Sword Art Online is supposed to take place, does it say, in like 2022. So yeah, the dates do match.
Yeah, a lot of people say that Kuro Yukihime is Kirito and Asuna's daughter. That's a popular fan theory.
I don't know if they'll, that it would be interesting to see if it ever reveals that, but I mean, the both series are in the light novels are still going on, and as far as I know, neither is showing any sign of ending soon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the light novel series just never seem to end, it seems.
Yeah,
That's like when you that's the thing, when I look at all of the, at least the anime that are based on the light novel series, you look back at them and the light novels, all of them are still going on. Konosuba is the only major one I can think of that actually ended, and even that was this year.
Yeah.
So that's one kind of issue I've had with, you know, getting in, because with manga the stuff ends, sometimes it goes on for a long time, but you can see a lot more cases where there's an anime made and then you can look and say, ah, the manga ended, but you just don't see that with the light novels yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but anyway, back to Excel World. So they figured that out. So that removes the blackmail material he has on them because, you know, mutual destruction or whatever. Also, there's this weird bit of fan service with Chiri. Like, that was weird.
Yeah.
Where she just, like, takes off her shirt because, I mean, I think we were supposed to take that she was trying to convey some kind of message or something, but it still felt really weird.
Yeah, it was.
So basically they've got, so they're going to try to settle the thing by having a final duel in Excel World where the winner gets all of the loser's burst points or something like that. And so, yeah, that's what we've got in these two episodes.
And for some reason, I just don't think Haru's going to lose. For some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it has something to do with the two episodes left thing.
Yeah, that is, that does seem likely. You can't even, like, say, oh, he'll lose and he'll have to figure out some way back into the game because two episodes left. Now, I know it's based on a light novel series, so stuff is going to keep going, but they're usually pretty good at resolving whatever the current conflict is at the end of anime seasons nowadays.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this video about where someone was talking about, and they were mentioning how in the past it was often just really annoying because the series would just end in the middle of something, whereas now it's, you know, more likely to at least conclude in a point where you get some kind of closure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually what they seem to do at the end of seasons, they'll do that, and then at the end they'll just pop in, hey, here's a tease for the next season to get you excited if we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that was Excel World. Then we'll move on to ReZero episode 34, which is named, This is the actual name of the episode. Love, 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 love you.
And that is only one problem I have with this episode.
In fact, well, actually, it's funny because when I saw that episode, because I had previously, before this, I had been looking at some of the stuff about the light novels because and I was looking at the chapter names because, you know, there's a bunch of chapters in each of the light novels. And I remember noticing that because it was such a weird title. And then I saw this was a title for it. I was like, huh, okay. And I don't know if this will be the name of the actual episode. It might not because, you know, sometimes they might be putting multiple chapters into one episode, but it would be so amazing if the next episode is named after what the next chapter was, which was love, 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 love me. I did not exaggerate the number of loves. That is the exact number.
Can we have a reason why? Like, is there any real explanation for it? Like, I know there was, like, this one short scene that kind of, but I don't know.
Well, anyway, I just think some of these things, they just like putting weird, like, English title stuff. I mean, look, Bleach had... You just need to look at some of the Bleach chapter titles. There's one called Why Me Sad? With a period at the end, by the way. Not a question mark. A period.
Wait, what was it again?
Why Me Sad? Unfortunately, the episodes of the anime don't have any... don't seem to usually have that. They aren't based on the chapter names in the manga or anything. Yeah, Bleach, the chapters are just, so many of are in insane. I'm sorry. I know this has nothing to do with ReZero, but I always just love looking at some of these on things. Oh, this one is Superstar Never Die. Actually, I really do like that. I actually like that. Not even in an ironic case, because I remember the story it is, and it actually fits the story a lot. It fitted a lot more than things like...
Why Me Sad.
Yeah, Why Me Sad is... I'm sorry, I'm trying to find a particular title that I'm just remembering. Of course, there was also Super... The almost infamous Super Chunky from Hell. Yeah. Everything... okay, so one chapter is called Everything But the Rain. The next one is Everything But the Rain Up to the Rudiments. And then it goes on up through 10 to Everything But the Rain Up 10 Prinz von Licht. You know, now that I look at it, most of the chapter titles for Bleach aren't actually that weird. It's just you'll sometimes get some of those really insane ones. Here's one. Okay. Here, Fear, Here, Too. And by the way, I need to make it clear, because these are written in English. The first here is as in the H-E-A-R, and the second here is H-E-R-E.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Marching Out the Zombies. And zombies is for some reason capitalized. Okay. This is one. This is the perfect one. And after this, I'm going to shut up and get back to ReZero. This is like one of the ultimate ones. The Shooting Star Project. We only have to beat you, Mix.
Wait, is this Bleach you're still talking about?
Yes.
What in the hell? I mean, seriously.
The Shooting Star Project, and then in parentheses, we only have to beat you, Mix.
Oh, my.
Okay. So, back to a series whose episode titles are not quite as crazy as Bleach's are.
But still pretty bad.
To be fair, most of them are a lot better than this. It's just this particular one is so completely crazy. So, so Subaru is talking with Echidna and actually manages to get some information about what's going on. Although, to be fair, most of the stuff he learns about Return by Death is stuff that we kind of already did guess. But it is nice that we get actual confirmation about things.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to try to figure out how to beat the killer rabbits. And because there does not seem to be the holy hand grenade in this series. So she tells him that, well, you can talk to the Witch of Gluttony who made that beast. And she's going to, swap places with them so he can talk to her. Except then he gets a different witch entirely who is this, like, girl who's super hyperactive. And actually, but then breaks Subaru apart, literally.
Yeah, literally.
Then she gets replaced by another witch, the one of Wrath, Minerva, who in her maybe 20 seconds on screen has probably made herself my favorite character in the series.
Why is that?
She's just hilarious. She just, like, punches to heal people, and then, like, is all angry at Subaru and is telling him, "Don't you dare do that again or I'll heal you." Just her crazy hyperactivity cracked me up. Mm-hmm. And she's only around for 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So after those weird bits of comic relief, we get the actual Witch of Gluttony, who Subaru talks to and manages to find out that to kill the rabbits, you have to get all of them in one place. And you can do that because they go towards mana, and if you find someone who's magically powerful, then they'll go to them. So we get that. So we've learned that. So Subaru's deciding, okay, I gotta get all this stuff figured out. I gotta go figure out how to get past these stuff in the sanctuary, defeat the bunnies, get back to the get everyone out, get back to the mansion, and take on Elsa. And I've only got 4 days to do that. So you're all excited for that. Except then none of that ends. It seems like it actually matters because Satella decides to show up.
She shows up.
Yeah, that's her, isn't she? Isn't it? Or it's that's like just wandering around and causing all that like black shadowy stuff to appear. I thought that isn't that supposed to be Satella? The actual Satella?
Yeah, I just was wondering what was the whole thing about.
Wait, sorry. When you said she shows up, were you saying that as a statement or a question?
As a statement.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying it as a question.
Yeah.
So I was confused as to why you didn't realize. Okay. Okay. That's solved then.
Actually, my question was about Roswell. Like, are we supposed to think that he's bad now or what?
I don't know, because so Satella's around and wreaking havoc, and Subaru's like, well, we got to figure out something to do here. And then in a post-credit sequence, it shows Roswell, because all the black stuff from Satella is, like, spreading everywhere, and is reaching him. And he says a bunch of really cryptic stuff. I mean, the sort of stuff where it probably will make sense if you look back on this way later, but here it's just all the stuff that could be interpreted in all these different ways. You're just thinking, so wait, is he talking about Satella? Is he talking about someone else? Does he have that thing? Was that like supposed to be one of those gospels, or was it that other thing you mentioned having, or what? The one thing that we got from that cryptic scene is that it's now very clear It was hinted at before, but it's made definite. Roswell does know that Subaru has the power to return by death. Because
mm-hmm.
he states about how Subaru, says, maybe this, I hope this time you'll manage to solve things.
Mm-hmm.
So he almost certainly does know that.
I'm just really confused. That last scene with Roswell was like, I was like, what? You know?
It was very confusing. I think it's just one of those things where you're supposed to be wondering what in the world was that about, and then it's explained later.
Yeah, so that's on purpose. Yeah.
So, what did you think of the episode? Earlier on, you indicated you didn't really like it, but you didn't really say why yet.
Yeah, I did not really like this episode. I don't like this abstract stuff where Subaru's in some sort of dream world, and I don't know. It just feels like season one was all about real stuff. You know, all stuff that happened, and then he had to do over again. But now it's like, we're just going to sit down at a table and talk. And it's the entire series has changed, like done a 180 from the first season to the second season. And I don't really like where it's at now. It just feels kind of like abstract. That was the word I kept coming to.
Well, that's not really a problem for me. I'm okay with it. I'm glad we got a bit more confirmation about some things. I do like Echidna, and I did just find Minerva so completely hilarious. I was disappointed that we didn't get more of her. But then again, she might be one of those characters that's funny for a brief bit, but if you try to keep around for long, starts, you know, getting annoying. But the problem I have is that this arc keeps switching what it seems to be about.
Yeah.
That's my problem. Because like I was saying before, I was all ready for this time where Subaru starts, okay, I'm going to put things together. I got to solve these things. Let's do it. And then everything just gets disrupted by Zatella showing up, who is... Yeah. I am curious, though, because Amelia wasn't there. So I'm sure we'll find out more in the next episode, but I am curious about whether it's saying, okay, is Zatella possessing Amelia? Is Amelia, is she actually, I mean, obviously she's different than Zatella, but do they actually, like, sort of share a body and Amelia is unaware of it or something? What? Because she's not there. That's the thing that made me wonder if she's like possessing Amelia or something else like that. So yeah, I am. Here's the thing. I've said this about ReZero, and this episode just shows it again. Whatever deficiencies the plot may have, ReZero, more than probably any other anime I've seen in my life, is very good at making me want to watch the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's all this stuff, and I'm just saying, okay, I think this is a weird direction to take, but I want to see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, problem is it's just going to zigzag back into, well, I don't know what it's going to do, but I'm going to get annoyed if we find Subaru back sitting at a tea party again. Those scenes seem so boring to me.
Well, I didn't really mind them, but yeah, I can see how someone wouldn't like them. One thing that I did see, because I was looking at a discussion, there is an interesting speculation that I saw some people raise, which is, if Roswell is aware of Subaru's return by death ability, some people were speculating maybe he somehow intentionally summoned all the bunnies there because he saw, well, okay, this timeline is screwed. Better just get Subaru killed so that we can start again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is interesting, although if that's the case, it would unfortunately leave us wondering It does. If that's the case, then that wouldn't happen again, which makes you makes all the time we spent with Subaru trying to figure out how to beat the bunnies feel kind of pointless. But we'll see. I mean, that was just a theory, but it was an interesting enough one I wanted to mention it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So we got ReZero, then we're on Tales of the Abyss episodes 9 to 10. Okay, so in our first episode, Luke is still unconscious, and apparently now he's in Ash's body because, he's the point of view character, so he has to. So I assume in the game, this is a way of, you know, keeping his viewpoint, but having him actually be involved with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone. So everyone's so let's see. Right. So basically, most of the party ends up, you know, going off with Ash to try to stop the bad stuff from happening and things. Or wait, did they go off with him exactly? Or I thought he separated from them. So.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, they were initially going to, but then he left to go off on his own. All right, now I'm getting it. So basically we have Luke coming to terms with the whole replica theme, and he decides I'm going to change and grow up, and I'm going to show it by cutting my hair, which worked perfectly well for Sakura. She cut her hair. It was a big dramatic moment. It was showing how she was going to grow as a character. And then she did nothing for 200 episodes. I mean, after those 200 episodes, she became very relevant to the plot and actually got some cool fights. So let's just hope that pays off a little quicker than it did in Naruto.
Yeah.
To be fair, about half of that was filler.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to Tales of the Abyss, we have that happen. They end up we find out is that because of there's so sort of prophecies called the scores, and people are trying to make sure they come true even when it's bad stuff. Including, you know, starting the war. This war and stuff. So our heroes are trying to stop that, but first they have to go and rescue some of the Natalia and that other person whose name I can't remember. Was it Ion or Ion or was that?
Ion.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know how they pronounce it, but yeah.
I can't remember. The problem when I see it subbed is, I mean, I'll listen to it, but then I'll forget immediately afterwards. It's only when it's stuff like when someone, how they pronounce Luke as Ruku, that that I noticed, really. Okay, so they end up, rescuing them and escaping, and that is basically our episode.
Did we watch two episodes of
this?
Okay, just making sure. I enjoy both episodes again. I like how Tyr and Luke made up, and now they can go on their little quest together. My only problem is that all this talk about Fawn Stones and Lorelei and all these big words, like, I don't know what any of them mean. And they just, like, keep on using them as if they're, like, common knowledge to everyone. And it makes me, like, I just get, like, really confused. And I like this series. I like where it's going. It's just too much of this complicated And as we found out from that spoiler, the value of pi somehow is going to be important for the series. So that tells you that it's not going to get any simpler. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll admit a bunch of the sort of political things are kind of confusing, but I mean, I can understand the immediate plot well enough and such. And hey, we got the party back together. I wonder how long they were separating the game itself.
Oh, I thought about buying. That's what I went to a video game store today and I forgot to look for this game. Used game store. I'm gonna have to look for it next time, see if I can find Tales of the Abyss. And I mean, I know it can easily find it online. That's not a problem. I just wanted to find it cheap, so.
Okay. Ironically, I'm looking at it. It looks like the game costs about as much as the complete series Blu-ray does. Like almost like exactly the same amount. The Tales of the Abyss for the PS2 for the 3DS are at least on Amazon $40, and the complete series Blu-ray is $40. I don't know. I assume they're I don't know if the, how much the DVD is. I mean, I assume there's a DVD release, but I think there probably was, but it's probably out of print now, so which is kind of a shame because I actually don't even I still don't have a Blu-ray player. I should like get one of the consoles that has a Blu-ray player and just use that.
Yeah.
I
But they're
just
coming.
I just I was just I was I liked it more when they had the blue when everything was, a Blu-ray DVD combo, so you could run it in either, but it seems like stopped doing that.
Yeah, what I hate is every time I buy a DVD and then I end up subscribing to a streaming service that has it on there, and I always am like, oh, always feels like I waste the money, but yeah.
I mean, DVDs are physical and you'll be able to keep them forever, whereas streaming services, I mean, if they go away, then, well, I mean, I guess that's what piracy is for, but I mean, I'm sure that even if like all that goes away, you'll be able to find the copy somewhere, but I'm just saying when you have it, it means that even if it means that you have the hard copy of it.
Yeah, but I've had stuff get scratched or ruined so many times that
Yeah, that is one thing where VHS tapes are, I mean, there are a little better than DVDs. If they get a bit like sort of, dinged or whatever, it'll hurt the quality, but it'll still work. Whereas DVDs, they get like scratch or whatever, they are just stuck. I remember having whenever I when I got DVDs from the library, a lot of times because they were used so much. I'm watching an episode of a show, and then what'll happen is it'll be playing, and it'll just kind of freeze up, and you'll hear like the sort of sound of it turning around for a while, and then it'll start playing, but it'll have skipped forward 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Right. Was there anything else? Nope. That was basically it for Tales of the Abyss. I am curious about what's coming up next because I mean we got our the obviously big plot twist out of the series, so yeah.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if I could have seen some of this if it does leave me like kind of wondering what a full anime series for Tales of Symphonia would have been like. The series where the heroes spend like half of the game trying to do something, and then they get told, "Oh no, don't do that. That's what the bad guy wants you to. That'll screw everything up." Actually, I've never played it, but I've heard that what a bunch of people pointed out with this game called Bravely Default is that for you basically spend most of the game trying to do something, but then find out that what you were doing, trying to do this whole time, was actually bad, and you shouldn't have been doing it. I just remember, I especially remember where there's this one comic about it. Let me see if I can find this quick, because I always thought it was funny. Let's see. I'm not seeing it, but I did just think it was okay. I think I got it here, where it's just someone's like saying, "Halt! You and your companions are being misled. I do not wish to fight you, but if you aim to continue on your path, you will need to be stopped." And then, like, a person says, "Well, why don't you just explain why you think we're wrong? Maybe if we know, we wouldn't have to fight and nothing needlessly tragic would have to happen." Person goes, "Oh, I'll never tell." and it literally, for the comments, this is a web comic called Awkward Zombie. It said, "Bravely Default is a game where every bad thing could have been avoided if the characters would have actually communicated with each other during the numerous opportunities they're given to do so." "I wish I could say this was uncommon for RPGs, but hilarious comedies of error cause the end of the world surprisingly often." Yeah. That's a fun comic, but Awkward Zombie. Anyway, okay, so that is enough tangents for now.
Yeah, I have a tangent.
Okay, go ahead.
Today they announced some Mario stuff, which is pretty exciting. They're going to bring Super Mario 3D World to the Nintendo Switch, which, like, was a really good game, but no one played it because it was on the Wii U. So, unfortunately, it's not going to be out for Christmas. They're waiting until February to put it out, but I look forward to that. Then they're also doing a Super Mario 3D All-Stars, which is going to be Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy. I think just the first Galaxy. But those are going to be out really soon in a thing for the Switch. And then they're going to make a Game & Watch with Super Mario Brothers on it, which it's not really that important, but someone like me is a sucker for nostalgia like that. So, yeah, that one's just me being too nostalgic, because there's no reason I should buy that game again. But, yeah, and there was a couple other Mario things, like something about Mario Kart. I'm not sure what. I gave up on Mario Kart after the double bass thing. It became too complicated. Like, Mario Kart 64 had the perfect thing. It was just kind of like, you know, you didn't need to figure out all these special stats and stuff to figure out which person you needed. You just either pick a fat person for a battle or a thin person for a race. And it was that easy. But anyway, those are the big Mario news that came out today, because it's the 35th anniversary of Super Mario Brothers. So I thought I'd just throw that out there.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that yet, but I'm looking at it, and I'm just it's weird, because you were saying that thing where they're having that Super Mario 3D All-Stars, which sounds cool and stuff, but then they're saying it's like a limited production.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. Yeah, I just saw the announcement. I didn't see it about that. So.
Yeah, it says the All-Stars package is being sold as a limited production, with digital and physical versions only available from September 18th through approximately the end of March 2021.
That's weird.
That is weird. I mean, it's not like this is like a really a collector's thing. It's just like if people want to buy it, why not let them buy it? But yeah, 64. Yeah, that might be interesting. Although I've already got all the games. Although I never played Galaxy. I never got around to it.
Yeah, I never got around to that one either. And I'd like to give Sunshine a fair shake. Now that I'm older and a little more patient with game.
I actually did try playing it recently. I kind of then put it to the side and tried some other games. It's just a game that I look at and I think that if they had had a few extra months to just try to polish some stuff, it would have been better. But about 90% of the problems with the game I have come down to the simple fact you have to get the first 7 shines in every single world. That means if are you stuck on a particular level, can you just not beat it? Well, too bad. You have to get that. One of the genius things about Mario 64 and then also Mario Odyssey and I think also the Galaxies is you don't have to do that. If you're stuck on something, you can make up the difference in other stars or whatever else you need to get them for.
In fact, what you're saying is probably the reason I stopped playing, because it was like, okay, I gotta beat this one level in order to beat the game. So I just spent hours and hours and hours and hours on it until I was going out of my mind. But I knew the whole time, if I don't beat this level, I can't beat the game anyway. So I want to do it now. And that's probably what got me to quit it.
That probably was. In fact, I know the level. Like it was called like the Secret of the Dirty Lake. I went crazy trying to beat that as a kid. And even now, I gave it another try. It's still really hard. And it's in the first world, too.
Yeah, is that the one where, like, the last jump, you have to, like, run backward and then quickly flip the other way for the final jump? The while being on a platform that, like, flips. It was, like, I just remember this. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It is one that has flipping platforms. I don't think you need to do a flip at the end, although that probably would be the easier way. That probably is a way to do it. I don't remember that, but it was like a few months ago I did it. The key, I suppose, to it, looking at it, is with that final part, that's the really annoying one, is you need to make sure that you need to be patient in trying to go forward. You obviously need to be jumping between the flipping platforms a bunch, because there's the red ones and there's the blue ones, and you know, like all the red ones flip, then there's a pause, then all the blue ones flip, then there's a pause, then all the red ones flip, and you just have to like make sure you're moving between them. But you need to be patient in terms of actually making direct progress, like, forward. You need to be able to think, okay, I can't jump to the next thing. I'll move back one and then jump back to this one when I get another chance. That was how I finally beat it. But, yeah, that really was the big problem with the game. And if that had just been fixed, a lot of the problems with the game would have been mitigated, because I could have still said, okay, this thing wasn't very good. I didn't like this thing, but you wouldn't have had to go through all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, all right. Any other tangents?
No, that's it.
Okay, I suppose we can list our favorites for the week then.
Yeah. My top one for the week is Tales of the Abyss, as usual. Number two, I guess Black Clover. And number three will be JoJo.
All right. So for me, despite reason for my first is so weird because I look because despite my complaints, I did still like the episode and got me excited for the next one. So whatever, ReZero gets first place. It probably doesn't deserve it, but I'm still putting it there. For the second one, a second will be JoJo and then Assassination Classroom.
Okay.
All right. So, that's it for our tangents for now, at least. This has been our show, Toonami Therapy. You can find our previous episodes at toonamitherapy.podbean.com. We already went through all of our tangent stuff, so I feel like I want to say something between this and the sign-off, but we already went through all of it. I guess a word of advice is if you need to try to be careful about what kind of stuff is actually required in your game, especially when it's as many levels as a Mario game or Sunshine. Because, if it's shorter, it's more acceptable to have to do everything. But when you go for that many things, I don't know. I'm probably not a great person to talk about game design.
Well, you had to beat level 8-3 to get through the original Super Mario Brothers. That meant avoiding the Hammer Brothers.
8-3 actually isn't that bad for the first time you find them, what you just need to kind of get underneath them when they're on the block, because there's those like two levels of the blocks and they'll jump up and down on them. If you can just get beneath them and jump onto the block from beneath them, that'll take them out. And then you can get, and then there's a super mushroom around there. And then there's another super mushroom or fire flower if you're already super in the next time you encounter them like that. And then if you got the fire flower, you could just easily take out the rest of the Hammer Brothers with that. I did that so many times. I went to that level as Small Mario. I ended up with Fire Mario at the end.
Yeah, well, I do the same thing, but the speedrunners wouldn't be happy with me. So, okay.
Yeah, well, the speedrunners, when you watch how fast, how absolutely perfect it is, it's just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, just a suggestion, if you ever decide to play Getting Over It, you might not want to watch the speedrunners because it'll probably make you depressed. Because that's one of those most notoriously hard to beat games, and then you're struggling and you're falling back down and losing progress, and then you just see that someone can beat the game start to finish in like 3 or 4 minutes. Then again, maybe that would be incentive. It could tell you, hey, someone was able to beat this, I could do it. I remember when I was playing through the advanced campaign, which is the hard mode of Advance Wars, what kept me going through those final ridiculously hard levels was thinking, okay, other people have done this. It is possible to beat this.
Mm-hmm.
Although, actually, there's this midway through the game level that was so hard that, I had to look at this literal step-by-step guide onto exactly where you move your units in each turn in order to beat that stupid thing. The funny thing is that it was actually a really easy level in the normal mode.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I wish they'd bring out another Advance Wars game. Anyway, okay, there's your tangent between that and the sign-off. So we'll see you next time.
Bye.